I'm Nora Flaherty. You're listening to MPBN at 5:30. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, a chemical company ordered to pay to figure out how to clean up what's likely to be one of the biggest environmental projects in state history. And remembering Leon Gorman, who turned L.L. Bean into a modern retailing giant. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Governor Paula Page is supporting an agreement that will strengthen regional cooperation in addressing climate change. A.J. Higgins has more.
During this week's annual conference of the New England governors and Eastern Canadian premiers in St. John's, Newfoundland, the group unanimously agreed on the importance of collaborating as a region to address climate change. Under this agreement, a 2030 reduction marker range of 35% to 45% below 1990 levels has been adopted. Patrick Woodcock is the governor's energy office director.
We really are one of the cleaner areas. We do have to continue to do our part, but Maine is well positioned to continue to be a leader in being a clean air and low-emitting CO2 state.
The New England governors and Eastern Canadian premiers have committed to developing new strategies, policies, and measures to continue reducing greenhouse gas emissions in their regions. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
With the goal of making study abroad more affordable and accessible to more students, a Portland-based company has opened a global institute in Berlin, Germany, which it says is based on a new model. The Council on International Educational Exchange, or CIEE, describes itself as the country's largest and oldest nonprofit study abroad and international exchange organization. CIEE President and CEO James Pello says the new Global Institute in Berlin is designed to overcome what he says are the biggest barriers to studying abroad: cost, the ability to get the right curriculum, and cultural support.
In part, it breaks down the cost to smaller increments to allow more students to participate. Second, it provides a series of courses that are taught in English and they are across the academic spectrum.
And third, the facility in Berlin is a self-contained campus. Pello says, though, that students are provided the opportunity to engage with German culture and society, including study tours and excursions. The organization has 62 different study centers in 40 countries. Pello says it offers a wide range of study abroad programs, helping students enroll in local universities to functioning as a standalone educational site. In weather tonight, clearing with lows in the mid-40s to mid-60s north to south. Tomorrow, sunny except for a few clouds in the north, highs in the high 60s to high 70s north to south. It's 25 minutes before 6. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. The former owners of an Orrington chemical plant must pay for an engineering study to figure out how to clean up toxic mercury dumped in the Penobscot River in the 1960s and 70s. U.S. District Judge John Woodcock ordered Mallinckrodt USA, LLC, to finance the remediation plan in a ruling issued yesterday. As Jay Field reports, cleanup of the pollution caused by the Hultra Chem Manufacturing Company will likely be one of the largest and most expensive environmental remediation projects in state history.
Hultrachem dumped 6 to 12 metric tons of mercury into the river. The Maine People's Alliance and the Natural Resources Defense Council first sued Mallinckrodt US LLC, which acquired the Hultrachem site, 14 years ago in an effort to force the cleanup.
I've been working on this case personally for almost 17 years.
And yesterday was a high point for Nancy Marks and the other lawyers representing the plaintiffs in the long-running case. Marks is senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Earlier rulings in U.S. District Court and Federal Appeals Court had found that Mallinckrodt was liable for the pollution. The courts also ordered a group of scientists to study the extent of the damage. In Wednesday's ruling, Marks says U.S. District Court Judge John Woodcock shifted the focus from debate over damage to the river to what needs to happen to clean up the mess.
He really understands the consequences of this pollution to the river and the ecosystem connected to it and the people connected to it. And he cares about it. And he understands that it's important to fix it because it's not going to fix itself.
To come up with a remediation plan, Woodcock is calling on Mallinckrodt, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Maine People's Alliance to work together with the help of a special master and agree on the hiring of an engineering firm on the company's dime. Scientists on the earlier study panel found evidence of eels, crabs, and black ducks, all with mercury limits that exceed the Maine standard for safe human consumption. pregnant women cannot safely eat fish caught in the lower Penobscot, and the Maine Department of Marine Resources has been forced to close a 7-mile stretch of the lobster fishery at the mouth of the river due to mercury contamination. Mark says Judge Woodcock will continue to monitor the case closely.
You know, if the parties can agree on a firm and the special master endorses it, then the court will probably endorse it. But if the parties can't agree on an engineering firm, then there'll have to be a process to make a decision about that, and Judge Woodcock would be responsible for that.
Officials with Mallinckrodt would not agree to a taped interview, but in an emailed statement, a spokesman for the company said, quote, Mallinckrodt U.S. LLC will work collaboratively with the Natural Resources Defense Council and the Maine People's Alliance to work toward an immediate, thorough, open, and independent process that will speed the recovery of the Penobscot River and estuary. This ruling allows us to move forward with specific studies to better understand issues we all agree require attention. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
You are listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN. In a few minutes on the show, we'll remember Leon Gorman, who died today at the age of 80. He transformed L.L. Bean from a single country store into a modern retailing giant. First, though, the Appalachian Trail, already hugely popular with hikers, is expected to see a big bump in traffic with the release of A Walk in the Woods, the movie based on the memoir of two men's experience along the 2,200-mile route that runs from Georgia to Maine. The trail's official end is in Baxter State Park, but a rise in raucous behavior, rule-breaking, and hiking pressure is prompting managers of this wilderness area to consider putting the trail's end somewhere else. Susan Sharon has the details.
Baxter is a 200,000-acre park carved out of the dense Maine woods, dotted with lakes and streams, and capped off by Mount Katahdin, a sheer granite fortress that rises above the tree line. At more than 5,200 feet, it's the tallest mountain in Maine. And for hikers northbound on the AT, reaching the summit marks the challenging conclusion to an arduous journey.
Hello, it's beautiful, you guys.
Hello, did you guys finish?
Nicely done.
We made it.
We are
drilled. Nicely done.
At the Katahdin Stream Campground, several long-distance hikers are being reunited with two friends whom they last saw a week ago. After 5 months of hiking, Matthew Fiormonte, Casey Hale, and Alexander Sherlitsky have just come down from Mount Katahdin. Their journey is over. They can now join the ranks of thru-hikers. Hale says timing of this adventure was important.
Knowing that the movie's coming out, that's what all the thru-hikers are talking about. They're like, there's going to be a lot of traffic on the trail next year. I'm really glad that we did it this year.
Ron Tipton, executive director of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, says he can't predict how many more hikers will hit the trail, but it's likely to be a lot. After the book A Walk in the Woods was published in 1998, traffic on the AT grew by 60% in just 2 years. He says the movie will bring more attention to the trail.
It brings the experience of the trail to a much broader audience. And I think that's good. I think the more relevant this trail is to more of the American population, you know, the better.
But for Jensen Bissell, park director at Baxter, an increase in use is an ongoing problem. Last year, there were about 2,000 thru-hikers on the trail. He says that's up from just several hundred 20 years ago. And Bissell says some of these hikers are violating wilderness park rules when they hike Mount Katahdin. Hiking in large groups, for example, relieving themselves too close to the trail and not cleaning up, drinking and smoking pot at the summit, and generally whooping it up.
You're really trying to give people the opportunity for solitude and expansive exploration of a wild landscape. It's a sacred mountain to the Native Americans of the state of Maine. So it seems reasonable that when you reach this place, you should have respect for the place itself and for the other people that are there and for the experience that it means to everyone.
Last month, ultramarathoner Scott Jurek, who completed the entire AT in just 46 days, was cited for his behavior on the summit, which included spraying champagne from a bottle and having an entourage of more than a dozen people. Now Bissell says park officials are trying to work with the Appalachian Trail Conservancy and the National Park Service to figure out ways to limit pressure. Bissell says one option is to move the trail's end outside the park itself.
Well, certainly no one would want that to happen, but these are still serious issues for the trustees of the park to address because their first commitment comes to protect the trust as it was envisioned by the donor.
That donor was Governor Percival Baxter, who envisioned a special place to protect and enjoy nature and to provide for non-motorized types of recreation. Recreation, says Bissell, does come second. And while some may not understand that, thru-hiker Matthew Fiormonte says he does.
We love Katahdin. We love the idea of Katahdin. Of course, some things could seem strict, but it's not my park. I understand the rules. They're in place for a good reason.
None of the hikers interviewed for this story said they would like to see the AT move to anywhere short of the base of Mount Katahdin. To do so, they say, would be a huge letdown. No rewarding last challenge, nothing to let you know you've really reached the end.
I don't think it's at all likely that the northern terminus of the trail will be moved.
Ron Tipton of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy says his group intends to provide more education to thru-hikers and to find ways to limit the number of people who hike to the top of Mount Katahdin each day. He says he's encouraged by statements made by Park Director Jensen Bissell, including the fact that Bissell intends to see the movie. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Finally today, the man who transformed L.L. Bean from a single country store into a modern retailing giant died today. Leon Gorman, the grandson of retailer L.L. Bean, was 80 years old. Patty White has this remembrance.
Leon Gorman had big boots to fill when he took the reins of L.L. Bean after his grandfather died. Leon Leonwood Bean was a prominent figure in day-to-day operations and a stickler for routine. But young Leon Gorman had actually been preparing for a leadership role for some time.
I used to keep a little black book of improvements I would make if I ever did get in charge of things around there.
In a 2006 interview with Maine Public Radio, Gorman said he had several hundred to-dos on his list by the time he became president, changes his grandfather hadn't been interested in.
It was a real challenge. The first thing I really had to do was upgrade the product line. It was, really obsolete.
While the iconic L.L. Bean boots didn't change, things like parkas got pull-cord waists and bright colors like teal and red. Gorman also modernized operations. He hired professional managers, added accounting and budgets. He expanded the company's direct marketing and embraced e-commerce. Every decade brought a new challenge, particularly the 90s.
Everybody got into the rugged outdoors business and into lifestyle merchandising and so forth and so on. And everybody was getting into catalogs and e-commerce and you name it. It was just intense.
In his 34 years as CEO, Gorman took L.L. Bean from a struggling mail-order outfit with a single store to what's now an international $1.5 billion business with thousands of employees.
He said very little, but when he did, he was hugely influential.
L.L. Bean spokesperson John Oliver says what makes Gorman stand out is that while he elevated the company's bottom line, he also kept its down-home feel and core values. Things like treating customers and employees with respect, promising lifetime satisfaction for all its products, and promoting a healthy outdoor lifestyle.
And for him, the business existed not only for that purpose, but it was the success of the business was to be shared with the communities, to be shared with the employees, and that he did.
Gorman donated his time and resources to many charities. Oliver says Leon Gorman was a humble, thoughtful man who inspired the best from L.L. Bean's employees. He died in his home in Yarmouth after a recurrence of cancer. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
And at 13 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms will be coaxed offshore this evening ahead of a cool front, and that will be setting the scene for an absolutely fabulous holiday weekend. Drier air will course into Maine overnight, all clouds vanishing after midnight, mid-40s to mid-60s north to south. One seasonable day tomorrow, then a few clouds late, caribou north, dazzling sunshine, crisp for all but southernmost Maine, upper 60s to upper 70s north to south, near 70 along the immediate coast. A splendid Saturday on deck, full sunshine statewide, still dry, upper 70s to low 80s, cooler at the beaches. Sunday, morning sunshine, afternoon clouds north, full sunshine for the remainder of the state with building humidity, 80 to 88 north to south, 70s at the beaches. Labor Day Monday, hazy, hot, and humid for all but the far north. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to A.J. Higgins, Erwin Gratz, Ed Morin, and Barbara Caridi. I'm Nora Flaherty.